is Dell Aware. News and issues for the First State. Here's Alan Udell.
Well, good morning. Third hour in-studio guests about a mattress giveaway for breast cancer folks, whether in remission or still battling or somewhere in between. We have in-studio guests, and, well, you know, we've often found these hours focusing on health issues have been the most well-received of anything we do on Delaware because so many times our families, best friends, somebody is somehow impacted. So let's bring in the studio here, Marianne, is it a sandwich?
It's Sarsic. It's Sarsic. A tough one, yes.
Well, if I dare ask, what ethnicity is that?
It's Croatian.
Croatian.
Yeah.
I'm somewhere in the former Yugoslavia, I was figuring.
Yep.
And Ed Mason, that's pretty easy. And also Lois Doherty?
Yes.
Okay, well, thanks for joining us here. So, anyway, also joining us live will be from New York City, Lauren Brome, United Breast Cancer Foundation. Wow. So, if she talks, you'll want to put on your headphones to be able to hear her as well. So, a loaded studio and loaded phones as well. Anyway, go ahead and tell us about the principles behind what led to this mattress giveaway, how it's going to be carried out here in the Philadelphia, Delaware region.
So this is the first Lauren Brome time that the United...
You, go ahead, Lauren.
Okay, I'm sorry. This is Lauren Brome from United Breast Cancer Foundation, and we've been doing these mattress giveaways since about 2012 in all different parts of the country, and we were really just drawn to the Philadelphia area. Marianne and I had connected at a breast cancer conference last year, and sometimes I find that you just connect with people, and we connected, and she was like, you have to get to the Philadelphia area, and I was like, I would love to, but we need help. We're a very small nonprofit. We're national, but we are an office of about 7 people doing the job of about 100, and we always say we're small but mighty, and we do Tempur-Pedic mattresses because a good night's sleep is really key to recovery and healing, and we often know that a mattress is the last thing that when you're in treatment that you have money for, and it's so imperative to get better if you're well rested. So we have this opportunity to get these mattresses through Good 360 and Tempur Sealy, and we love just reaching different communities to get the mattresses. And Philadelphia has really been a remarkable city. I think that yesterday my director said it's really truly been the city of brotherly love. We have been so well received that it's going to be our biggest event on Saturday we've ever done.
Yeah, I was going to ask why mattresses, and I guess you kind of answered it in the sense of people have so many immediate needs, and they're robbing Peter to pay Paul in terms of hospital bills, and you don't think about it, but then ultimately, where are you going to be a substantial portion of your life enduring your situation?
Exactly, and you know, we give money away too. We have all different programs for grants. But we really feel the money might pay for a rent for a month, but a mattress should hopefully last you 20 years, so we're really giving them 20 years of support.
That's a way of looking at it.
If not more.
So how is it, I want to bring in our guests and their personal stories, but how is it going to work briefly this weekend?
So this weekend, it's great news for us. We're going to be giving out 528 mattresses, and you would have had to have applied already. But due to the overwhelming response, and I just want you to know we have never done this before, we are going to be adding a second date. It's going to be July 13th. So even though the mattress applications on our website say the date to receive them by is June 10th, we have extended that deadline. It's rolling right now. And we're going to do another event in the same location on July 13th. So I just say if you haven't had a chance to get your application or doctor's letter in yet, please do it still because we're going to be coming back down in July to get more getting more mattresses and giving them out. So for us, it's all about servicing as many people as we possibly can in the time we have and with what we have to give.
And once again, people go where to apply?
Our website is ubcf.org, and the mattress application is right on there.
Okay, very good. So we're going to bring in in-studio guests here, and we can relate to the story of the mattresses in a moment, but just generally how you came to be in the situation where you are getting out the word of the United Breast Cancer Foundation, and obviously through desperate personal experience in many instances. I guess let's just start with Lois.
Good. Hi. I found out through a Facebook support group I'm in this Together Philly Wilmington. And I thought, wow, this is great. I had a bed that was old and lumpy and bumpy, and I can't wait till Saturday night when I can sleep in the great bed.
And you've been dealing with the adversarial life circumstance of breast cancer?
Yes, I have stage 4 metastatic breast cancer. I was diagnosed with that 5 years ago.
And right now, your situation is stable?
Yes, that is stable. And back in April, I was just diagnosed with a second cancer. I have stage 3 esophageal cancer.
And dare I ask, because for people that might have to relate to this for the first time, I mean, how often do you end up having to go to a doctor, medical center? It becomes, I assume, the dominant part of your life, marking that calendar.
Oh,
down.
Yeah. The calendar's always full.
Always full.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay, well, let's move on. And Marianne?
Yes. So I actually was able to get a mattress for my family and for my daughter, so two mattresses, back in the fall when they had this event in Maryland. So a member of the peer support group I started, she posted it in the group, and that's how I found out about it. And the two of us rented a truck, and we drove an hour and a half to get our mattresses. And as soon as I got to the event, I knew that this was something that had to come to the Philadelphia area. And that's when Lauren and I first connected. But I feel like I've known her for years because she's just so wonderful. And she and I have worked together to get this event here. And we even helped her find the warehouse space in Hatboro through a member of my peer support group.
And Ed?
Wow. I've known Marianne 4 years. I'm also a member of her peer support group, but I'm not suffering from cancer. I'm just friends with Marianne, and she recommended me to be a member of her group, and I jumped right at it.
It does bring to mind issues of transport and carrying mattresses. That's not an easy thing for a lot of people. So the logistics have to be mind-boggling at times.
That's also why Marianne enlisted me in this particular job. I'm a truck driver. So when I saw that she needed mattresses to be shipped from Hatboro down to this area, I told her that, you know, driving a truck, that's pretty much what I do. Hatboro is not that far. And I volunteered, and my boss, I asked him if I could borrow his truck that I drive every day, and a trailer, to bring the mattresses down here. And he said, well, it's not that many mattresses. Just go rent a truck, and I'll pay for it.
Wow. Let's bring in, again, Lauren from New York, and just talk about some of the logistical nightmares, or at least challenges that you folks have faced doing this, and some of the responses you've gotten.
Logistically, this is always a challenge. The hardest part sometimes is finding the space to even get the mattresses delivered, and then we do the event there as well. And I really believe in the power of social media for good, and Marianne's group, they put a message out there. I said, Marianne, I'm striking out. I'm letting you know I'm really trying to find a location, and everyone's telling me no, 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 and I don't know what I'm going to do. And then someone in her group works for an amazing organization called NextMed, and they like, well, we have extra space. So it's NicoMed, I apologize. And they're like, we have extra space. We just moved into a new building, and we would love to have you. So that's the first logistics, is even finding a space. And then we have to logistically get 400-plus people to pick up mattresses in one day. And they have to come with ties and whatever they would need to get the mattress in the car. So, like I said, we're a small group of people. So what we normally do on the day of is we ask for volunteers. And we also also hire local workers just for the day to help us, temporary employees just to come help us. because our goal is to work from about 8 to 5 on Saturday. And because we've had so many people coming, we're actually going to be doing a pickup on Friday evening, too, which we've never done before. So this is a lot of firsts for us. And every place we go is unique because it's different. It's not like it's our warehouse and we know the logistics and the ins and outs and the doors. This is going to be a completely different space for us. And we've done these so many times now that we know that once we just get there, we'll find our groove and we have a little chart of flow chart of how we want things to work. And in addition to the mattresses, we also give out what's called pink bags. And these bags are loaded with makeup and clothing and just goodies to make these women feel good and just give them a little bit of happiness. And I know that for me, when you get something new, new clothing or new lipstick, it always makes you feel just a little bit better. So if we could give that to these women fighting breast cancer, we're happy to do it.
Understood. Just to reiterate, the United Breast Cancer Foundation's website, ubcf.org, ubcf.org, or put it in another way, Union Bravo, Charlie Foxtrot, .org, O-R-G there. Okay, in studio again, I think there are probably two types of people. Some people who really don't confront the reality of others' health afflictions until it affects them themselves or their family. Otherwise, it's distance if you're not experiencing it yourself or a close family member is. I mean, there's such a myriad of afflictions, all kinds of things. You go on with your job and your friends and your social pursuits and your avocations and hope that your life will be forever peaceful, and then something strikes, God knows what it's going to be. In this case, Marianne, your story.
Sure. So I was diagnosed in August of 2016, and this was after I found a lump on my breast myself. And so I went in for my annual mammogram, which I was due for anyway, and it came out clear, even though we marked the lump. But my OBGYN and I said, you know what, let's just make sure, because I have a history in my family on both sides of breast cancer. So I went in for additional diagnostic testing, and sure enough, it turned out to be breast cancer, but not the lump that I found. The breast cancer that they found was not palpable. That lump was just a cyst. So that, I think, saved my life.
So it was really an accident that you found it.
Absolutely. And then hearing that, you know, I was fine from the first mammogram, I would have waited a year if that lump.
Yeah, but something very instructive. So the initial testing found that you did not have breast cancer, but they were just testing the cyst. They would not have inadvertently found tissue further in that might have told you that there was a problem. Is that what it was?
So my situation is I have very dense breast tissue, and dense breast tissue is hard
to get through,
to screen. Exactly. Traditional mammograms, cancer and dense breast tissue come up as white. So the tissue will white out the cancer, and that's why you need to do additional advanced diagnostic testing. So that's what I did. I went to Crozer, and I had a 3D mammogram, and I had an ultrasound, and that day they said you need a biopsy, and we're pretty sure it's cancer.
And so then what happened?
So after the biopsy, I went to Penn Medicine, and I had a month later a mastectomy. And then at the same time, I began my reconstruction, and I had the final reconstruction surgery, which was implants, January 2017. And that was my last big event for my treatment.
But meanwhile, always the constant nightmare, trepidation of, you know, things can recur, things can pop up, the unknown.
Oh, my gosh, Alan. So that is what I have been dealing with all this time is that mosquito bite a mosquito bite or is that a lump that's come back? You know, and the fear that just like flares through you is unreal. It really can be toxic. And that's one of the reasons I started my peer support group, because I needed to be face to face with people who absolutely understood what am I going through.
As if you haven't had it, how do you understand?
It's impossible. So I don't blame anyone who hasn't had it. It's just that I need people around me. They're like my tribe now.
Is it, Lois, is that how you feel?
Yeah, I feel that way too, because I was first diagnosed in 2007, and then I was cancer-free for 7 years, and I didn't think it would come back. I didn't know it would come back. 2014, boom, it came back, and it had metastasized. And then by 2016, it had gone to my bones. So I've learned how to live with it. It hasn't been easy, but I've been dealing with it. And then just this past March, I had a PET scan, and the PET scan showed that I had no evidence of disease, and boy, was I one happy girl.
Mm.
I was one happy girl. And then, sure enough, I figured it was time to get a hiatal hernia checked out, and I went and got an endoscopy done, and the PET scan had showed in March that I had a hiatal hernia, but it never showed the tumor in my esophagus. So you just don't know.
One thing can obscure another.
Yes.
And I guess, again, to come back to something, and sometimes I think the commercials for cancer hospitals, although needed, are a little misleading when, you know, you hear you're cancer-free. Yeah, right, maybe at the moment, or maybe there's something somewhere that is undetectable, untraceable, but it's like a ticking time bomb.
Yes,
that's exactly right. So we in the breast cancer community don't use those words. We'll say NED to each other, and that means no evidence of disease, because as far as the current...
That's much more accurate.
Yes, yes. We could still have sleeping breast cancer cells in our bones that 20 years later, like Olivia Newton-John, decide to trigger and grow into a reoccurrence. So...
Speaking of, do you think when there's a widely publicized celebrity case, it actually performs a useful function in terms of sensitizing potential victims not to just brush aside something that is suspicious but doesn't look ominous?
It certainly can help people understand that this is something they need to take seriously. And again, my cancer was not palpable, so doing a monthly check on myself would not have found it.
Yeah. Which doesn't mean people shouldn't try to do monthly checks.
Oh, absolutely not. Exactly. Yeah. But they need to have the realities of the screening tools, and those monthly checks are very vital, but they may not do the trick all the time.
Lauren, listening in New York at the United Breast Cancer Foundation, these stories, I'm sure, are all too familiar to you.
They absolutely are, and that just really what inspires us to just keep on doing this. I mean, I've been working here for about 3 years, and the stories we hear every day, it seems like women are becoming younger and younger, and they're metastatic, and we don't do any research, but we help support the women and men directly.
You just said something staggering. It looks like younger women are younger and younger. Is that factually correct? And if so, is it lifestyle and our environment, or is it better detection methods, or what?
You know, we don't do research, so I don't have the statistics. I just know what comes across my desk is when I see a metastatic patient that was born in 1991, it seems to me that there's something going on. You know, I don't know. Marianne, when you see the group, do you see younger women coming in, or is it?
Absolutely. There are a number of people who were diagnosed when they were breastfeeding. So they have, you know, an infant that they're taking care of while they're going through treatment. And some people are diagnosed while they're pregnant. What we're finding is that under the age of 40, breast cancer is the leading cancer for women.
And yet, don't we hear that breastfeeding pregnancy is somewhat a deterrent?
That's what the research has shown, and yet here we are, you know, with this issue that's growing. And the other thing is, when it's diagnosed in a younger woman, it tends to be a more aggressive subtype.
Right. Comes around faster.
It comes on harder, so like triple negative, which is very difficult to treat.
Because, you know, like I'm thinking, I mean, we know that demographically one of the great sea changes in American society, good or bad, is that childbearing is happening at a later age.
Oh, that's an excellent point. So I'm wondering if there's research that points to something about that.
Yeah. All right, well, we're going to take our break. We're going to be getting into much more. And for our listeners, again, a massive campaign here to help breast cancer patients, survivors, everybody with mattresses, a great mattress delivery effort, and all the ins and outs of the situation. And perhaps you, the listener, have only become sensitized, regrettably, because of something in your family situation or a close loved one, but it's something we have to grapple with. And one thing we'll get into the second half hour also, you know, all the environmental factors, you can become absolutely paranoid about everything, but certainly with good reason, how much out there in all these chemicals and all that we surround ourselves with. I know plastic containers have become a bugaboo. We'll be getting to that as well. Here on Delaware, WDEL, stick around.
No user fees. No subscription charges. Always free access to the news and information that matters to you. 1017 FM, 1150 AM, WDEL. Thanks for listening to Dell Aware. Here's Alan Udell.
And market's still down, but not significantly right now. 11:35, we're concentrating on breast cancer and this mattress pickup and giveaway, which is so central to many lives. And in studio, several guests, and on the line from New York, Lauren Brahm with the United Breast Cancer Foundation. Let's bring Lauren in before she feels forgotten in New York. But once again, to tell us about this event. This goes on in how many places, Lauren?
We do them all over the country. Last year we were in New York, Nashville, California, and Baltimore. The year before we were in Florida, Virginia. We try to really go all over the country. I usually try and connect with someone that has a tie to the breast cancer community, and they help me market the event and find a location. And then from there, the rest is history. We just start marketing the mattresses. And some people in the beginning are like, you're giving out a mattress? They don't believe it. So then they see it again, maybe from their doctor's office or from a support group. And then it, the applications pour in because they realize what an amazing gift that we're giving them that will last the test of time. And they're Tempur-Pedic mattresses, and they are so comfortable. I think Marianne can attest to that because she has one. She got at our Baltimore event. And we just know the gift of sleep is priceless, and we want to help as many people as we can.
Understood. Ed Mason in our studio, since you do the logistics, the transport, and what has been the biggest challenge for you, or has it all kind of become almost mechanized for you?
Driving a truck, that's easy. It's asking people for help that I find hard. If it's for myself, I couldn't ask for help. But because it's for a charity, it's easy.
Yeah, takes the edge off. I completely understand. To our ladies in studio, Marianne and Lois, again, who can possibly understand this unless they're in your shoes? The best you can do is relate to listeners, and we can just try to imagine. But one thing we're getting into, even discussing off the air, is paranoia. Of course, paranoia can be legitimate. It can be illegitimate and just get us off track. But the notion of environmental consequences of things, all the artificial, whether it be ingredients or substances in our lives, and looking at something, could that give me more cancer? Describe life like that when you get really kind of worked up about things.
I had a full-on panic attack about plastics right after my mastectomy, and I was in my kitchen, I think it was after dinner, and literally I'm spinning around physically and looking at all the pieces of plastic. My carrots are in a plastic bag. My food is being stored in plastic containers. And even my daughter's medicine cup that I was pouring her medicine into, that was plastic.
Now, is that because you had just read a news account or heard something about plastics that triggered this, or what triggered it specifically?
So I had been doing my research. You know, one of the things you do when you get a diagnosis like mine is you just go nuts on the Google.
How did it happen?
Mm-hmm. And so I found information on Google that said, you know, there's a link between plastics and cancer. And so I knew that in my head, and that's where that panic attack happened. And so I had to get rid of everything plastic in my kitchen, and I ordered all new glass food containers, and all the plastic went to Goodwill. I even got rid of my plastic water bottle, even though they have those new BPA-free water bottles. They're now saying that even that's not good enough. So mine I'm more drinking out of today is stainless steel.
Yeah. Lois, a similar situation for you or not quite?
Well, it's different with me being metastatic. If I have a backache, it's like, oh no, is that something new growing in there? Or just as an example, the side of my breast where I have silicone, I thought I had a tumor growing in there, and we weren't sure what was going on in there, and nothing picked up on a PET scan, and it turns out my silicone leaked a little bit. But you get scared. What's next?
Yeah.
Because you don't know with this disease where it's going to pop up next.
To bring up a sensitive issue, I think you've just hinted at it, to reconstruct or not to reconstruct.
Yes.
So I went into my first consult with my breast surgeon, and I told her I didn't want to reconstruct. I just want the cancer out. And I was like everyone else who had never had breast cancer. I just assumed, you know, you could do your surgery, do your treatment, and you're good to go, and you walk away from this. And I never expected, oh, this is now a change that I will be living with emotionally. And she convinced me that I would do better healing emotionally if I reconstructed, and that her patients who go flat just have more of a challenge and a struggle seeing themselves like that.
What about people in your group? I suppose some people, for some of them, it's so sensitive you don't even discuss, right? But any sense of the percentages?
I don't have a sense of the percentages. Actually, we discuss everything in the group. And the joke in my group is I will flash anybody if it helps them, because I have a 3D nipple tattoo. And so if people are considering, you know, well, I think I want that, but I'm not sure, how does it look? I will show them. And I even did, I had a reporter come with me to have my tattoo videotaped, and News Journal did an article and a video on that.
So, does that happen a lot?
The flashing?
No, the tattoo.
So, yes, that's a common thing. And so what I was looking for, what many people with who go through mastectomies are looking for, is to be normal again. And so I wanted to see exactly what I had before. And that's why I wanted a 3D nipple tattoo. And that actually was extremely emotionally healing for me. And I think other people find that as well. Now, some people choose to do tattoos, but not as a nipple. They choose flowers, or they make their own design, but something that marks their journey for them and helps them emotionally recover.
Because some people choose not to have the nipple.
Right, right. You can have a surgery that is nipple reconstruction. In fact, someone in our group just had that yesterday.
I bet a psychologist would have a field day figuring out what leads one individual to not do anything or do a tattoo reconstructing what God put there versus come up with something entirely different.
Yeah, yeah, who knows? It's whatever that makes them feel right about what they've been through, because you're forever changed. Yeah. So there is no right or wrong. It's only what is best for you.
One thing I was going to ask you, I wasn't going to ask you near the beginning of the show, but we do have, of course, a small percentage of the other sex that comes down with breast cancer. Are any a member of your group, or is it just too sensitive? There's a men's parallel group or something.
There are male breast cancer groups. And in fact, my uncle had breast cancer 2 years before me on my mother's side. And we do not have any members right now who are male who've gone through breast cancers, but they're definitely out there.
I mean, I gather it would be inhibiting to have a male in a group when females have a free discussion. Or am I wrong in that regard?
You are wrong, because in the breast cancer community, we just come together and support each other. So they would be more than welcome to be there.
But there is some kind of a parallel group you're aware of.
Not locally, but nationally,
yeah.
Yes.
Could a male breast cancer patient or survivor take advantage of the mattress giveaway?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just double checking. Mm-hmm. More about just the phobias, and bring Lois back in here too, and emotions day to day. Let me just ask it this way. Do you ever get up in the morning where you don't think about it?
No, you get up every morning and you do think about it.
First thing comes to your head.
Oh, yeah. Another day of living with this disease.
Do you have a hobby or passion, something that takes you momentarily or longer away from it?
I try to keep myself busy. I try to keep doing things. I have a husband who doesn't like me sitting around. He likes to keep me moving.
Yeah, he's shaking his head right now.
He likes to keep me moving.
Yeah. Same thing for you, Marianne?
Yes. So what I have found is, as much as I can fill my time and my life, that helps me not be inside my head, where it can get pretty dark.
I mean, do you have people in your group, for example, who were into travel, and they travel even more exuberantly now? Or do you have people who have some, whether it be knitting or collecting stamps or doing something in the great outdoors, it does give them a measure of psychological leisure.
Yes, we have all of that. So there's a large contingent, actually, even in the Philadelphia area, that do dragon boat racing. And there are a number of dragon boat groups just for breast cancer. And we have members in our group that do that. And that's just a wonderful community for them and a wonderful exercise.
And you just trigger this question in my head. You have certain people who are risk takers and others who are not. For example, I would never parachute. I can't imagine doing that, or skydiving, or you name it. I mean, I don't even like rides at adventure parks. So do you see people who go through a sea change? Because after all, after you've been through this, what's to fear?
Everyone has a different response, but you're right. So do you know Lou Anne Kahn? She had breast cancer in the 80s, and she spent a year daring herself to do something new every day of that year. And then she wrote a book about it called I Dare Me. And that's exactly what she did. And that was part of her healing process.
Lauren Brahm in New York at the headquarters of the Breast Cancer Foundation. I wonder if you would offer input or want to join us, add some comments on anything we've discussed in the last few minutes.
Yeah, no, I would like to just for 1 second talk about the nipple tattooing.
Oh, please.
And the reconstruction. I think that, like Marian said, it's so important to feel whole again. And we actually can offer grants to help women pay for that, because sometimes that's something that insurance won't cover. So if cost is something that is holding you back from feeling whole, we can definitely help with that. We encourage you to go onto our website at ubcf.org and apply for a grant to help you pay for that if that's something you want to make you feel whole.
You know, something just occurred to me, and this is either for Lauren in New York or for in-studio guests. Obviously, the C word, a doctor tells you, you have cancer. I can't imagine. I mean, it's one of the memorable life moments, very negative. I mean, your life is forever changed. I think we can all agree on that. There's just nothing like it. Having said that, we know some cancers are very slow progressing. We hear of men with prostate. Of course, there's some exceptions and all. But what about just the idea of other cancer patients and survivors versus breast, and just because of breast, in terms of the psychology of a woman in our society, that it has a different psychology, a different feel from someone who has some other kind of cancer. I mean, have you ever talked to others who are suffering from something different, and whether their life experiences are consequently different? Is it possible to generalize?
It always depends on the person. But yes, I think there's a generalization of what we experience as cancer patients, regardless of the cancer. Breast cancer becomes extremely tricky because there's so many subtypes and there's still so much they don't know about it, and they don't even know why it metastasizes. So we have that constant fear that's pretty valid because there's no cure.
And of course, metastasize. I know that's the common thread just about every cancer. Now, some statistically much, 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 much less, but always that haunting danger.
Yes, it's very frightening.
But does your group ever then work with other groups of cancer survivors suffering other types? Or no, you've got enough going on in your group?
You know, we haven't done that yet, but we would be absolutely open to doing that. You know, there is a wonderful organization. It's national, but there's local chapters in Delaware, the Cancer Support Community Center in Hoquesson. And they are for every cancer, and all of their services are free. And I went there for more than a year in a support group that was tremendously helpful to get me from my mastectomy to a place where I was more emotionally stable.
So Lauren Brahm in New York, what about that question about the inherent uniqueness of breast cancer for all the reasons we know, versus just the C word? If any person receives a word from a physician confirming a diagnosis, how one's life changes indelibly.
I just think the breast cancer community as a whole, it's a group of people that just come together for whatever reason. And it's the diagnosis, just everyone just groups together and rallies around each other. I know from working here that we get people and women calling us that see all the great things we're doing and all the great groups that we're involved in. They're always like, do you know anything for ovarian cancer or kidney cancer? And I don't know of any other cancers that have the kind of support that breast cancer patients have. And it's wonderful to see how if you all form together, we could do such great things and we could all really help each other out. And I think sometimes in the world we live in today, I think sometimes there's a lot of negativity around things. You turn on the news and it's something negative, and that's why it's so rewarding to come on and radio and if you're on TV and to just show the positivity and the humanity that is really out there that I don't think everyone always hears about.
You're giving us the silver lining here, that camaraderie, that coming together, which certainly is the best of human traits.